Right, it's now recording. Make sure it is. Yes, it is.
I always worry about when I do a podcast, spend an hour talking to someone and then you discover, oh, I forgot to turn it on.
Yeah.
Hasn't happened yet, but it's going to one day. Okay, right, so, first question was, what was the name and aim of the project?
Okay, it was the Software Alliance Wales project, and the aim of the project was to provide higher level technical training, mainly to software engineers. That was the intention.
Mm-hmm.
And there were four different strands in the project. We call them student projects, that was one strand. Training. Then there was higher level certification. This was by an external agency. I've kind of forgotten the name of it now. It's known worldwide, so it kind of had this higher level computing approval stamp, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And then the fourth strand then was, I can't quite remember the name of the fourth strand, but it was to do with, if you like, outsourced training, so outside of those who were within the team of five universities.
Yeah. External providers.
External providers.
Oh, I see. Right, okay. So, complex project. Yeah.
It was, and it was, 2008, the bid went in. 2009, it was successful. So, I think we started just after, it was supposed to start in at the end of 2009. It didn't start until 2010, and it ran to 2015.
Mm.
And we did have a 6-month extension, which is usual with Welsh Government projects.
Great. Okay. And what was your role within the project?
Yeah. So I was the academic lead.
Mm.
I was involved in the early days with the bid submission. We had a person in Swansea. They were the contractor called Betty Williams. She was hugely well known. She set up IT Wales.
Oh right.
And brilliant person to write the bid. And so we made sure that we had an input, because we knew that even though we were a tiny computing division here, we knew that this merger was going to happen with Carmarthen and with Swansea Met and so on. So we could see this happening, and we thought, well, if we're left out of a project now, because we think that we don't have the critical mass, then we're not looking forward into the future saying, well, why would a student want to do computing with us if we're not part of this larger, cross Wales bid? So we were pleased that we went in, but there were challenges then being small.
So you're the academic lead within this institution.
That's right.
And in terms of the management, was that done by Swansea then?
It was. They had a huge team. So there was five universities, all outside, so in Convergence Wales.
Yes.
So five of us, and Swansea were the contractor. So it was managed from Swansea University, from the Computer Science Department.
I haven't got a question here about that. In terms of governance, then there was a project board.
There was steering groups. There were lots of layers.
Yeah.
Because the project itself, it was just under, just over 13 million. So it was seen as a kind of a flagship project. So they had lots and lots of levels of committees, steering groups, both internal then with external stakeholders.
Yeah.
And then we had, of course, evaluators coming in as well.
Yeah. So in terms of the institution's representation on that sort of higher governance, was that, so there was someone else who was, or someone higher who was involved in that?
So for example, there would be people from finance in Swansea University within the college. So they have, we have faculties, have colleges. And then outside of the college, they would have people from their own kind of research and innovation unit, and just a speckle of people across the spectrum of divisions that dealt with research and community in the university. So, they weren't going to miss a trick, and they would pick up on the most interesting aspects, that, like cross-cutting themes, things like that we would be ticking the box, but they would see this as a major part of the project that we must not overlook, things like that.
So, would you say that you had the scope of the work being closely controlled by the project board, or would you say that you were left to go and get on with what the bits?
Well, we felt that we were left to get on with it, except we always knew that when we would go to these sort of higher level meetings, that we had to have something extra in our bag that we could say, well, actually, even though this target wasn't meant to be achieved in this way, we actually found that we were talking to this company and we did this, and so we were able to add on extras. But that we felt that we were doing that naturally as an institution. Other universities who, I suppose, maybe don't have quite the vocational edge that we do, because they're maybe much more research focused, and they had particular strategies that they were working toward. They wouldn't have had the same, you know, realization of what they were trying to achieve as we were.
Yes, I think because I think that there is, it's interesting with projects that question of whether you deliver the targets you're given, or whether you say, well, this is a bunch of money for us to do stuff with. We need to do the targets, but there's other things we can do as well.
Yeah.
And that's a very different philosophy in a way. Right. Different people work, and that. At the moment, I'm in a blinkered mode. I think it's better to say, well, these are the targets, we'll deliver those. Okay, that's great. So here we go. At the start of the project, because you were involved from the start, obviously, and the bid,
Well, actually, I wasn't.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to be, but somebody else was given the role, and then it was given to me.
So early in the project, then, what would you have predicted the main challenges were going to be?
Well, for us, because it was focused toward the, if you like, the computer scientists, and especially the software engineers, first of all, we weren't teaching people on those kinds of courses.
Yeah.
So we knew that we had quite a high number of targets to meet who were in this specialist category.
Mm.
We knew that was going to be a challenge right from the start.
Yeah.
Especially because the bid went in with us being the rural flag carrier, if you like.
Yeah.
So it wasn't going to be easy for us to kind of hunt out, you know, the computing consultants of the Cambrian Mountains.
Well,
So that was, we knew that was going to be a big problem.
Yeah.
We also could see a problem with this third party provider. Which we saw became a problem later on.
I think it's we'll come out later, but yes, I mean, I think often it's easy to see where the problems are going to be, and you know, whatever you do about mitigation, you're right that that is where they come out.
Another one was, if you like, the way in which they were going to count the targets.
Mm.
So Wales, as we know, was divided by different boundaries. And because we were the Lampeter Ceredigion camp site, we were also in some ways competing with Aberystwyth, because they're also Ceredigion.
Yeah.
So there was a real difficulty in how you would count the targets. And we used to have, it was almost like a joke, it was the contested Ceredigion, you know, this kind of invisible line that we must not cross on either side. And in some ways it was a joke, but sometimes it wasn't funny at all, because you know, we would want to work with company X because we knew that we had a relationship with them, or we knew that we knew what they wanted, and we didn't really want Aberystwyth coming in, because we thought actually they're going to rub them up the wrong way, because this company, you know, works in a particular way that we know we can manage.
Yeah.
There was lots of intricacies there with them crossing the lines.
And I think that's, you know, it's one thing to work as a consortium where, if everybody's willing partners and there's clear blue water between their interests.
Yeah.
And it's another thing when, you know, you are, you know, on a grand view, you're on the same side, but on a day-to-day view, your targets that you're being held to are... in a way you're sort of almost like building in a conflict there, and that is all potential, you know, tension there. Great. Okay. So when you got involved there, how confident were you that the project would succeed?
I think very early on, when we advertised for the posts, we had some ex-students who had actually applied, and it was an open application process, but. They were very strong as students, and they had some work experience and so on. We knew when they took on the role that they were just going to fly. And then we managed then, I'm just not sure how we did it, maybe it was the way it was advertised, the wording in the job descriptions, but we had seemed to have choice about the candidates, and we were able to be quite picky then, knowing that, you know, some post was maybe quite academic, but it also needed kind of a sales pitch type person as well. And you think, how on earth do you get these different skills in one person?
Yeah.
But we seem to be lucky, especially this campus. We would have employed up to 9 people on the project. And everybody, we only had two people change posts, and you know, we had other people come in, but everybody was in post right up until the end date of the project. You couldn't say that for the other partners of university.
We felt
proud that we not only had we got the right people, but they were willing to see it through.
Well, I suppose that's part of it, is having the capacity and to do it.
Yeah.
But I suppose the other question is about the you said about the targets and the assumptions about the targets. Did you feel that they were realistic, or were they just stabbed in the dark and there's the numbers picked up, pucked out of nowhere that might or might not be sufficient? I don't know.
This was really complicated. When the bid was being put together, the if you like, the author, who was Betty, tried to access data from Welsh Government sources. Now, the data that she was working with, she believed, was the correct data, and it was completely wrong.
Oh.
So, for example, when they gave us targets to do with, let's say, the software developers, they gave us something like 120 over the whole of the project, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you divide it, because we've all got a budget, so it's sliced.
It sounds like a lot to me.
That's right, so we had something like, 18 or 26, like that. And when it came to actually brass tacks and saying, well, you know, we're going to hunt out these companies, and you would find companies, but then they would say, well, actually, company house, we say that this was the intention of the business, but we changed our focus 3 years down the line because, you know, we found that we were getting, you know, more work, and this is our bread and butter, this is the focus. So we would gradually start just taking off, you know, these companies, and we thought, how on earth are we ever going to reach our targets? So we did have to go back to WEFO and renegotiate some targets. And, you know, they did listen to us, and they did accept the justification, but it was really hard putting that justification forwards.
No, because I think that thing about the, you know, the information base at the start, and that's something certainly, you know, everybody's having a problem, is that the, you know, as you say, there's putting the superstructure in place is manageable. But the fundamental question is, you know, we've got some expressions of interest, but will we actually be able to sign up the people?
Yes.
And there's always that sort of that moment of truth where you just, and you just have to dive in and say, well, we hope so. We've done what we can. And I think certainly in the bid process that it's difficult. It's difficult to have enough research, market research type stuff. At that point when you most need it, we never seem to have enough. But, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, great. Okay, so and then how was the project's progress monitored? So you said you were reporting to the project board.
That's right, to the boards. So they would be formal boards, if you like, and they were every 3 months.
Mm.
But then we would have every 6 months we'd have where every single person on every team was supposed to get together for these meetings as well. Mm-hmm. So you would have, you know, up to 45 people in a room. They have the rooms outside in Swansea, so that was okay. But some of them, those meetings were heated then, because you had, you know, some of the people who actually do, you know, the real hard work, you know, are sitting face to face with sometimes their competitor. Mm-hmm. And when you wanted to move on to something that was a little bit more, you didn't get to. So those meetings were useful because the human element was right there at the core. And sometimes you actually pin down some real details there, especially when it came down to numbers and people were saying, look, I've managed to do this, and you said you've done that, but it's not in the system. So whose number has been recorded in the system? Because I've actually done the work. And people would have to put their hands up and say, well, actually, you know, I thought I was going to have six companies because I met with six, but actually I only signed up two to this. So I think those two were mine. So, but this would go on for ages, and you think, you know, it's like having an abacus just going around the room. Everybody's counting their own little...
So in terms of meetings, yes, you've got the quarterly and then six monthly. Did you do monthly highlight reports or anything
like
that?
Every single month we had. Well, we had a claims report that was part of the process.
Yeah.
So all of the money that was spent, any procurement, all of the finance went into a report, and along with that was how we've met the targets for the end of that month.
Right, I see.
And then we would report that for each of the four themes that were in the project, and that meant giving exact numbers.
Mm.
Which again was useful because when you went to these larger group meetings, then you could say, well, these are the numbers I reported. Where are they in the system? And outside of those meetings, then we would also have people from Swansea who were called the business developers in the project. And they would actually pay us visits every 6 weeks as well.
Yeah.
And we could have slightly different conversations with them.
Yeah.
So, not so much to bend their arm, but just to say, we're having a real problem with this university sort of on our patch.
Yeah.
Can you help us, talk to the person who's actually on the ground and, steer them kind of a bit north? Toward Bangor,
It sounds like it's quite actively managed and monitored.
Oh, it was really. I was impressed with it actually. I was also pleased as well because we were given at least two occasions where we were able to. I can't remember what the wording was. We were able to renegotiate the budget.
Yeah, reprofile.
And for us, because it was such a long project, being able to do that, and we were able to plan those meetings 6 months beforehand, so it gave us good time as well to have a chat internally, get our deans to approve, and then go to them.
Yeah.
And that was great.
Brilliant. Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I must admit, one thing that I would say, my impression is that with WEFO funding, that they're much more proactive in terms of monitoring than most sort of academic type funding, where they almost just give you the money and tell you to come back when you finish. That it's a very different, it's a very very much down the detail end.
That's right.
You know, and so certainly I think it's I've worked for different under different funding streams, and this is the WEFO is the most has the highest requirements.
The only thing that was strange about it is it was all paper based. So there was no, because it was a software Alliance Wales project, one would have thought that we would have a system to, report, fill in boxes online. Any of those processes that we had never seemed to quite work. So it was very much, filling in the form, sending off the spreadsheets with all of the reports and
There seems to be an issue about creating simple web solutions, which they're perfectly doable.
Yeah.
But something about setting them up seems to be.
Yeah.
They never seem to actually do what you want. Yeah. Oh, very very rare. Yeah.
But I'd say on the outside, I've got a very positive impression of how the project was managed.
Mm.
If I was in Swansea, my feeling was that they wouldn't have had the same feeling. And I think that was because there was a change of personnel, the project manager changed. Towards the end of the project, we didn't have a project manager. But because we were so thorough in what we were doing, we didn't need it as much, but they felt they did. Because they were in a big room with lots of different projects in the room, and I think they felt that they needed somebody to kind of say, are we having our weekly or monthly meeting? And they didn't have, so they lost that in the last year. So some of the meetings towards the end could have been fraught because they were not as happy as they were at the beginning of the project. But we sort of managed to keep out of the politics of their problems, to see what we needed to
do. I think it's interesting that there is, I've had different project boards, and there are some project boards which are very much driven by the need for consensus. And the meetings are very bland and effectively pointless. Because people don't want to have the difficult things. So in some ways, it might be healthier to have a fractious meeting, although it makes meetings unpleasant, but it's because there are genuine, there are genuine differences of interest there, isn't there?
That's right.
And I think, that it's actually healthy. If there is a difference, then it's better to have it, to get it out, rather than to have people just chuntering away and politicking behind the scenes and sort of.
And I think you're right, and that would be so when they would pay visits to us, they still continued on with those visits. And sometimes we felt we were more like the psychologists at the room listening to them.
Well, funny you say that. I've had the same experience. People would come and literally spend all day with us just complaining about how bad things were back at the office, and they'd say, your paperwork's fine.
That's right.
All right, okay. Yes, and I suppose I suppose it's a question of people who know enough about it to understand what the problems are.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so what known or unforeseen issues were encountered in implementation? So either ones you expected or ones you didn't expect. Were there any nasty surprises?
Well, I suppose one was this third party. Mm. We had a particular amount of money in the budget that was set aside for it. It was probably up to around 1 million. Mm. And we had to go out to tender because it was over 5,000, tiny minimum threshold. And when we went out to tender, we ended up having to go for, it was something like the Learning Tree, you know, this massive international organisation. And there, the headquarters that we had to deal with, I think they were based in Basingstoke. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're in the southeast of England or anywhere else in England and you're a company, you can probably find 8 people minimum in your organisation to go on this particular training course. And the problem we had, of course, is in Wales, you know, we're dealing with companies who are very small and tend to work as alliances, you know, with each other. And if somebody goes on a training, they'll come back and share with the other companies often. At least that's our perception of what they were telling us. So any course that we were putting forward where people saw it being interesting to them, we needed a minimum of 20.
Good grief.
Well, we couldn't get up to 12. So we managed, after about 6 months, no, a year and 6 months, that's right, 18 months into the project, to reduce that threshold down to 12.
Yeah.
We still couldn't get it.
Yeah.
So then what they did is we bargained with them so that because the money was flowing in their direction, that they would give a discount if we got 8, and then the other 4 were discounted. Of course, that was a problem for us, because how do you then, you know, discount people? You know, do you wait for 8 to sign up and then the others are the lucky ones?
Yeah.
Or do you share the... So it was difficult, you know, trying to figure out how you would account for that kind of financial, you know, status. That didn't work at all. So in the last 2 years of the project, we went back to WEFO and said, this was a bad decision.
Yeah.
What should we do with the money? Do you want us to give that money back? And they said, no, we don't want the money. So what we were able to do then was put forward a case to redistribute that money for other things, which was fantastic then. Meant that we were able to develop our own modules instead of sending people off to Basingstoke or wherever to be trained. So it worked well, but it took all of those years to get to that point.
Yeah.
So again, we wouldn't have foreseen that as a problem, that you'd need this minimum number, and with the companies being so small, we would have thought that would have never been a requirement.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's and that coming back to that thing about the prior research is that there's, you know, until you have a feeling for what's on the ground in terms of the particular people that you're having to address approach, that sort of practical thing is I suppose, which is one of the challenges of a rural thing, isn't it? That that it's the same with business networking, is that, you know, that there are no business networks as you get away from, you know, Swansea, you know.
That's right.
I mean, even Carmarthen doesn't have any, you know, well, hardly any. It's just, there just isn't the same, there isn't that sort of critical mass again.
Yeah. There was another problem. You've probably come across this before as well. CRM.
Oh, yes.
So we had this issue where when we wanted to store information about our customers or the businesses that we were going to work with, who owned that record of information? So the agreement was that it was an open project, so any companies that we were working with must be recorded by Swansea University.
Yeah.
So he said, well, are we allowed to store that separately? No, we weren't.
All right.
So it was all stored on one system.
Oh.
Now, the problem was that Swansea University have their own CRM across the university, but the argument was that because of the IP, when our students would be working with these, that the IP was always retained by the businesses, that those businesses had a right to be held separately on another database.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it meant that Swansea then had to use some of the money, or technical money, then to develop their own CRM system. So what they did is they used an open source system, I think it was Sugar, that we used in the end. Now, it worked fine to a degree, but I would say that it probably wasn't used like a CRM system.
No.
So it was probably more like a database and a reporting. For example, so when I tried to extract records from it as well, I would find that it didn't match our reports. But also, it was very hard to edit. If they put in the wrong information about a company, so maybe one of our business developers went to the company and the company said their name was this, and then the next time they visited, they said, oh, actually the full name for a company is this, and it was never properly corrected.
No.
So then you'd wonder why the company was only being recorded once on one training session when they attended 3, and it was because the other two sessions, it was in the other name that they were recording. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. So there was no big cleaning up of the data at any point in the system, and we weren't allowed to.
No.
Yeah, because it was.
I think that's. I mean, certainly that's a general issue about sort of data quality.
Yeah.
That shared systems are great for people to contribute and whatever. Yeah. But unless somebody is actually regularly cleaning it, then it becomes, raises all those issues. You know, and that strange question, how hard it is to say, what's your company name?
Yeah.
That which seems like a simple question.
Yeah. But then there was other issues as well. For example, let's say we work with a particular company very well, so we'd say, well, we're happy to record the company's name and their address, but I don't feel we have to give you the name of the person we're speaking to, because we worked hard to make this contact, so making that contact is not part of this agreement. you only need to know the postcode, in fact.
Yeah.
So we'd have all of these kinds of discussions, because why should we? Because once we leave, then Swansea University have all of that information.
Yes.
So there were those kinds of issues, and we felt that we had to protect our institution because we would say, well, in our institution, we may well have another project where they may also be talking to this company, yet you hold all of the information. So you can't turn around then at some point and say, well, you can't contact this company because they're on our system, we should be contacting them first. It gets quite complicated, because the other problem we had is we had a meeting once, a project meeting, and we said, is there any CRM in our university where, if we've got a project, we know we're contacting person X in that business, and you've got a project and you're going to contact them, doesn't it seem a bit lousy that they're going to have five different flyers coming through the door? Wouldn't it be nice to package all these up, either as an electronic bulletin or just one piece of, file that they can choose then? And there doesn't, and we, no. I don't think we ever got to that point.
We've been perpetually on the point of almost doing it for the last few years. That we're still, so we're currently, we've used the Microsoft one at the moment, just within the project. Although, to be honest, it's a bit of a pain to use, and we're not really getting any money's worth out of it. We'd be better off just using a shared spreadsheet because it's not, it's a basic one, and
it doesn't trigger alerts.
It doesn't do the same as the expensive ones, we had actually put in money for trying to develop something ourselves, but we realised that it was going to be such a pain to manage the contract that we've basically developed workarounds, which are it's still where we are, and then of course the other side of it is the issue of data protection, of course, which is nudging you away from a single centralised database for all purposes, to say, well, actually we ought to be only collecting data that we're needing for what we're currently needing, and we shouldn't be seeing this as being a source of future leads, because we're not clear, unless we tell them. Okay, so here we go. So what was the biggest challenge the project faced in practice? What was the one thing that kept you awake?
Right, okay. So because we were going to teach these higher level skills, we'd just gone through the merger. So our programs were moved from Lampeter to Carmarthen. So it meant then that these were difficult times, because we had to make choices about how we were going to still talk about the project, and there was a lot of uncertainty. So it was these were difficult times. But also we were unsure what programs we were going to be taking forward. We knew that they were going to be cutting our computing program, so it was just really shaky ground, because you feel like you've got to carry this project forward, yet you don't know if you've got any programs to back it up anymore. And so in meetings, when we try and remind people when it was coming up to restructuring, the importance of that these two go together, we didn't feel that probably we were being listened to on that side. So luckily we got through it, but we did lose some staff that we would have liked to have been able to use on the project, especially on the computing side.
I suppose that was sort of, thinking about in terms of what you expected or didn't expect, is that the impact of the merger was something that was completely outside what had been thought about. Was there any consideration at any point, serious consideration about saying, well, shall we stop doing the project, shall we withdraw? I just wondered.
No, we never did that because we decided early on that we knew that there was going to be another move. We knew that we had contacts in Swansea Met at the time in computing, and that we could work with them if we had to, because they weren't part of Swansea University. So there was a way in there, and with colleagues Sir Gar, we were already starting to work closely with them, and they had a very good computing section as well. So we knew that we were starting to build up a small team where, you know, we were going to get access to the companies. But what we did instead was we went to the project team and said to them that we wanted to try and change the focus as well of not just dealing at the high-end computing, because we were able to say then about a year and a half into the project that, you know, we were getting these software engineers, and they don't have a computing problem. They have maybe a project management problem, or they have social media problems. They don't know how to advertise themselves and reach markets and so on. Now this was really frowned upon, that we would be introducing such diluted, you know. They just did not like the idea of this at all, especially when most of the people at the meetings were the professors, you know, the deans of the faculty, and really they didn't, they just wanted to muffle over it, and so it was really quite hard having those conversations. But we were able to say to them, these companies that are coming in for these, you know, Python training and smartphone, you know, and Android programming, all of that, they will also be doing a pro, maybe a training or a few modules on social media, you know, starting up from Facebook and going through to analytics and so on. And they will count as a target. And they couldn't see the connection between that and higher level skills. Yeah. And we were saying, well, let's turn this around and say, is a higher level skill a strategic management view of the business succeeding? Or is it just a higher level technical skill? You know, because actually we were saying they're both connected. And that was really difficult because they were not, they were coming from research and computer science disciplines, and they just thought we were talking out of our heads, you know. But we managed to do, we managed to show them that these companies who are really playing, you know, at a very high level and competing in the market, that they actually gained a lot of use out of coming on these other kinds of programs. And they were in rooms with people that we were, they were making connections with. And it's not necessarily that they were making connections for the computing side, but they were actually making connections saying, oh, well, we have consultants from London work with us, and some of the companies that we were dealing with, you know, work with Oxford University. Well, you know, when certain teams would come down from Oxford, we didn't know that you have, you know, cottages that we can rent out and, you know, things like that. So they made business connections. So we were trying to say, well, we can see a bigger picture to this, and there's actually a networking capacity that we hadn't brought into this, that not just the engineering, you know, computing engineering network, there's this other business network as well. So it took a while, but we just decided anyway to just put forward these training courses. We had some consultants come in who did a really good job. Because we had good feedback and we were able to report on that, then Swansea decided they would try it out, and they kind of said, we'll just dip our toe in the water. When they had advertised some of their technical programs, they were lucky to get three or four in the room. They advertised this social media strategy program with one of our consultants, and they had about 36 people. And I couldn't believe it. All of a sudden they were hitting targets that they never planned on. So it changed the focus, and so that was a challenge, but that was really hard getting that across.
Right. So one thing I was saying, following on, I was just thinking in sort of in Prince 2 terms. It doesn't quite come out there, and you only have the question left to add it. The question that I was going to ask is, in terms of the benefit that the university gets from participating in the project, was it just that there was money to employ people who would be employed anyway, or was it expanding the team, or what, you know, what you know, if you were to ask the hard question, what does the university get out of this? What would the answer be?
Well, what we did when we were writing the job descriptions, because they were, we wanted to employ them on good salaries, because they're going to be working with these companies. So we wanted them coming in with degrees or even masters, whatever, you know, some of them had PhDs as well. But what we wanted then was for them to, in their job description to also come in on teaching if needed.
Yeah.
So we were using the training teaching word, you know, carefully, and we even use modules. You know, we use that because you're already training on a module, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you. It wouldn't be educational modules. So it meant that we were able to slice off maybe 0.2 of their time to be in the classroom.
Right.
So that was a real benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially for the student projects. Mm. So because they some of the people we were employing had experience out in industry as well, you know, in the computing field, and we had computer science students coming through. So it gave them a real kind of, you know, the hard edge, if you like, of talking to companies who would say, look, I've already explained that to you, you know, do you need to explain twice? Whereas in the classroom, we're saying, okay, how many more times do I need to explain it to you? Yeah. And the students would go, oh, that person, I'm not really sure if I'm getting on with that person. It's like, well, do you understand what they're trying to teach you here? It's professionalism. Mm. So, and that was good. So, but they would also say as well, oh gosh, you know, did I do that well? Did I? So they, you know, were able to, you know, improve their CV as well,
because
they hadn't realised how difficult it is to teach.
Yes.
Because, you know, training is one, teaching is another. So, we felt that being able to move them sideways was useful. We were also able to work closely with them. The computing section. I can't remember what they're called.
Media
computing. All of those. And and also, if we were providing a training course and we knew that we had spaces, we would let people in marketing here know, and the computing, and often they would send people along.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could include them as a as a target, but not counted.
Right.
So that we could include them to say that they came in because the seat was available. So isn't it better to actually have somebody in the room rather than, you know.
So in terms of the, I suppose, in terms of the corporate benefit, if you like, that it was actually an enhancement to the sort of academic offering that was there. I think, the reason I was asking, I was just thinking about that, you know, as you say, that with these projects that there are sort of millions of pounds floating around, but so much of that money comes in one end and it comes out the other, that the, you know, the university's benefit bit of it it often turns out to be quite small. You know, the project's worthwhile in itself, but the you know, the justification for the trouble and and time that's involved, you might wonder whether that's actually, you know, whether you might be saying, well, we're going to sit on our hands on this one, because
it's true. Because one of the other things that we did is we set up what was called Code Club, and we set this up so once a month, every Wednesday evening, our students. We'd go with the T&L building, we'd have pizza, and it was 6 o'clock to 8:30, and with businesses as well, so we'd have a speaker, and then the idea was that everybody would sit and code together. Now, it didn't work at that right from the start, because the students and the businesses almost found that once they had they listened to the speaker, they wanted to have a conversation, and they were quite interested in hearing from the students, and that worked well, and we had lots of staff who started attending those as well. People from, you know, that work in Penyarth and so on, and that was great. And then after a while, then they'd start talking to each other on LinkedIn, and then start sharing their coding. So the coding actually didn't happen in the room, which is what we thought would happen. Now, with the other universities, they didn't like the idea of us calling it Code Club. They wanted to call it Hack. Hack Club or something, because that's much more hoochie. You know, so we were a bit too schooly for them. But what we wanted to do is say that, you know, this is an invitation to our students to meet businesses, and they're not pretending that they're qualified yet, or they have the experience with their qualification. So, and it helped loosen them up a little bit, and also they were rubbing shoulders with businesses who then were actually offering them jobs.
Brilliant.
So it was really
good. Yeah, so it was there was a real benefit in terms of the the. It's what, you know, our core activity in terms of students, that they were getting a better deal because of the activities which we
had. And we were able to then link that in. So, for example, when the university would tell us that there's a theme, an enhancement theme, student engagement or something like that, so we would be able to say, well, our students have gone to Code Club and they've done this. So we were able to use that to feed into, you know, reporting back.
Great. Okay. So, did the project meet its targets, and what changes were made to the targets over the course of the project? So you've said that. So did it meet its original targets, when it was modified when you reprofiled?
Right. So what happened was, so when we reprofiled, they didn't reduce the targets.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So this is a financial reprofiling, but the targets stay the same.
So the targets stay the same. Right. Then, later on, towards the end, WEFL came back to us and asked us to increase the targets from that was in the original proposal. So we agreed to do that. And one of the carrots that they were dangling over us was when we, not quite reprofile, but when we had that pot of money that we weren't going to use for that third project provider, when we divided that out amongst us, then that was one of the things that said, okay, now you've got this new money, we're going to increase your targets. So we did have to meet these targets.
And did you meet the...
We met all our targets.
All right, Graham.
What we were a little bit concerned about is when the final report went in, again, they were using the CRM system, and we didn't feel that all of our final targets, because we overshot our targets, so we actually looked very bad.
Yeah.
So that wasn't quite reported.
No. But I suppose, in a way, I mean, that if WEFL were happy, then I mean, in a way, it doesn't,
Yeah, that's what's interesting. So you're audited and evaluated as an individual, or you know, as an individual institution, but when the overall report goes in at the end, when they just look at the overall targets that they set, which was maybe 900, and you say, well, actually, overall we met something like 1300, they say, okay, targets met. So they never digged into any one university, and maybe one university wasn't pulling its weight. That wasn't because overall all the targets were met.
Yes, well, I suppose that their relationship is with the consortium as a whole, isn't it? So they would say it's up to the project board to deal with any sort of non-performance. So how were lessons learned captured during the project and at the end? And I suppose that's the first question, and then there's the second follow-up. Have these informed the institution's future practice?
Well, one thing that I was always conscious of throughout the project is that I was never able to carry out any kind of appraisal of people throughout the project, because the way the appraisal scheme, which has only come in recent
times... The staff appraisals.
The way it works is that if you're full-time, if you're academic and you're full-time, you're appraised, and I think it works for support staff as well.
Yeah.
But when you're project staff, you don't seem to fall into the same entitlements, or I'm not quite sure what they would call that, or the same HR process.
Yeah, I think that now they would, but at the time they didn't really, because there was a whole probationary period thing.
There was,
But yes, so there seemed to be very much a feeling that project staff had fixed term contracts, that they HR took a very sort of hands off approach towards their sort of development and performance.
I felt that. In one way, in terms of the individual's development, it would have helped them to have some kind of formal feedback, because you know they want to update their CV, they want to be able to say that you know they were recognised for leading in certain things, and we were never able to quite give them that reward.
No.
But separately, in some ways, I didn't have the same protection either, because if I needed to report something, I mean, I didn't in particular, but if there was a reason for me to report something, I wouldn't have had anywhere to do it.
No.
Because I wouldn't have been able to say, well, none of these targets have been met in the way that they're expected to, so how do you, you know, take this person to, you know, to task to say, oh, they need to be put on another kind of probation, or, because you can't change the role that they've been given, and there's no other role for them to go to.
So it's difficult. So at the end of the project, was there any sort of lessons learned exercise of any sort, where in terms of feeding into the final report or something that you know?
I think if we were focusing on anything about the project, it was to do with the original data sets that we had to work with. That's the kind of things that we were reporting back to WEFL.
Yeah.
They didn't want to know about individual institutional things.
No. Yeah. So you were saying, well, the data that you gave us, or that we've the bid was based on, was incorrect, and that's a lesson we learned from. from it. Okay.
There was one other thing. And this was interesting as well. So when the bid was originally written, across the whole of the UK, the government initiative at the time was to set up these, what were they called, business development kind of centres across the whole. And there was this view across the Midlands that they wanted to accredit companies, and it was these software companies. And we followed that because they had been successful, and we'd seen examples of businesses going through that accreditation where they had done well in, you know, gaining new business and markets and things. Then what happened was that completely fell apart then when there was a change of government, and they kind of wrote out those business development.
Yeah.
It seems to happen a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and they were actually, it was good.
Mm.
But this was already in our bid. Mm. So then it comes, we win the bid then, and then we said, actually, we've got nobody to fall back on anymore. And this company that was in the Midlands, they still existed, but they just didn't have that network of business development units anymore. So they were kind of just waiting for us to give them business.
Yeah.
But that's not what we wanted to use them for. We still wanted that credibility. Luckily, 2 years into the project, they were bought out. And they were bought out by this multinational American company who had a standard that was much higher. Now that was lucky, because then we were able to use that new company, CompTIA, they're called, CompTIA, and go to these conferences and go to business meetings across these, you know, different regions of Wales, and then meet up with business developers in, you know, the different counties of Wales and say, look, this is a credible stamp. Can we talk to the businesses about this? So we managed to use that, but had that not happened, you know, we would have had to then find ways of people going for this accreditation that nobody really quite believed in.
Yeah.
And you had to pay money towards it, so you had to pay up to £2,000 for this accreditation.
Yeah.
Well, why would you want it when there's other kinds of, you know, Microsoft accreditation and so on?
Yeah.
And so there was a real danger there. So in some ways we were just lucky then that that company got bought up. Otherwise, that would have been some kind of damage that we would have had to deal with. Either going back to Welsh Government saying, look, this is not how it was at the beginning of the project. We're also not seeing the advantage anymore because it's no longer a UK-wide, you know, sophisticated network. And we've got no good recent examples. They're all too out of date anymore.
Yeah.
Does this accreditation have the same value? So,
okay, so I suppose I was thinking about, so in terms of the lessons learned, bit of it, that's... Perhaps I could sort of frame it this way: that say, if you were running the same project again, what would you have done differently to what you did? You know, was there anything that you're maybe you know, as you say, well, it all went fine because you called right, or you know, was there a thing that you would have changed if you, you know, that you would want to take into account the next time you ran it? I mean, I think you've hinted at that, that sort of that tension with the other consulting partners. I think that might be something that, you know, in the future you might say, well, can we have a clear dividing line?
Yeah.
These postcodes are yours.
That's
Yeah.
So definitely that was the kind of thing with the partners.
Mm.
Internally, if we were going to change anything, the way in which we had to have signatures for finance spent was really quite complicated.
Yeah.
So as the lead, I wasn't allowed to sign off. I could sign off that the procurement and had all been agreed and we had the evidence, but I wasn't allowed to sign off that this was, you know, formalised.
So it had to go up to go higher.
But it would go right up to the top.
Yeah.
So much so that the people who were signing were not even in Wales anymore. They were based on another campus. And they, of course, didn't want to lose that, you know, association with the project, but it made it too slow. So that was a real problem, and then so it would come back, and actually it would go through Swansea, so we had to work for a long time to get a different kind of signing process in to a substitute on the Carmarthen campus. Now that speeded things up, so it came from, you know, the other campus to Carmarthen and then back to us so we could approve it. But you know, if you're talking about a company waiting to have money refunded to them, because sometimes they put money in and they get a third back, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that was complicated as well.
Yeah.
And our institution wasn't involved in that, Swansea were. So luckily they were able to cope with that, but it still had to come back through here as a signing off process that it had been done, and I wasn't involved in that.
Yeah.
So that was really hard keeping track of, and I that took more time than it should have.
So essentially those processes didn't fit in with what actually worked on the ground. I think the closer that you can align what you're doing with what you're, you know, with the systems that are already in place, the easier it is.
Because you find yourself working so many ways to find a solution. But when it comes to finance, of course, you know, you can't. That's the one thing that needs these signatures. Yeah. And digital signatures weren't acceptable.
Yeah. So, and of course, there's that issue that the people who are who are actually authorised to sign, that they're so far away from the detail of what's actually happening that they, to be honest, they're not in a position to know whether it's right or wrong. And that seems to be, you can understand in terms of audit and so on. Why it's like that, but it does mean that those systems of checks and balances don't actually provide the confidence that you ought to have to say yes, this money's been spent properly because it could. Okay, so here we go. So what impact has the experience of managing this project on your professional practice? Have you changed in the way that you work as a result of your experience?
Well, what's really interesting is when a project comes to an end, it would be really nice if there's another project to go straight on to, because otherwise it seems like a divorce. Mm. So for a long time I'm kind of walking around going, I have no friends anymore. All the people I work so closely with. Mm. And I didn't feel like I managed them. I felt that we had a really fair relationship. Mm. They had all moved on because there weren't any posts for them.
Yes, yeah, sure.
So then you kind of revert back to doing the thing that you were always doing but you didn't have this extra work to do, and it was quite creative, some of what was happening on the project as well. So you lose that, you try and fill the gap with other things.
Yeah.
So recently I took on a leadership and development module, so I think I felt I was able to do that now, take on a teaching module in that area, which I would never have done before.
Yeah. On the basis that you felt that you had the experience that you could talk about.
That's right, I felt that. I could examine traits and behaviours and things in an interesting way, because I'd seen it's so much easier to just manage a system than it is a person.
Well, I think I mean it's interesting, because I think that there is that completely different sort of attitude that you get but when working with projects, that there's problems, but you also have it's very energising, because you have very specific targets, you have resources you can chuck at things, and you can make changes relatively quickly.
Yeah.
And I think that it's there is a difference to sort of say, oh well, if academic work runs on an annual basis, and 5-year plans, and everything's very gradual, there is an excitement involved in being involved in projects, because you're operating at you're buzzing all the time,
and there's that kind of hierarchy that you have to work
with.
In a project you create your own
and then there are frustrations, but at least you can define you do have the power to change things within your remit. You have quite broad authority.
That's right.
Okay, so I suppose, and then sort of following on from that, so in terms of your role in the project, what do you find most challenging personally? And sort of, what did you find yourself sort of tested? Was it the social interactions, or was it the dealing with conflict, or was it dealing with your superiors, or time management, or whatever?
In some ways, it was more the people management side. That because I tried to allow people to get on with the tasks, and then we would have monthly meetings that where everybody was in the room, and we would chat. We didn't talk at length. We had particular things that we wanted to get through. Everybody had to go off and do things then. But I found that some people needed to see me all the time, every day, and I found that hard, because I had to be up here for a meeting or down in Swansea, and I'd say, I don't have a long time to talk, but You can't turn somebody away from your door, because I find then that might lead to something negative.
Yeah.
So you have to learn how to always find time for people. So I don't know if I did a good job. I still don't know.
So in a way, what you're saying there is that rather than sort of managing people is sort of less on tasks, that managing the team as individuals and that. Being aware of that, I mean, it is a weight. It's a bit like it's a bit like with looking after children, that you just continually feel that, oh, there are these people who you're responsible for.
Yeah.
And that and as you say, some of them you can leave to get on with it, and some of them you can't.
Yes.
And some of them don't want to, as you say, some of them don't want to be. Because I think that that's, and that judgment all the time, which means that you're having to think all the time about that.
And it's awful because you know, you're always trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, say, well, you know, they needed to have this conversation. And I'm thinking, you know, how does that fit in with the conversation I had 3 weeks ago with them? So, you know, is there something I need to be aware of here? You know, making sure that we don't cross the line with each other. You know, you mustn't get too friendly at the same time. You're trying to show them some empathy, you know, because people are so different. So, yeah, that was the trickiest part. Sometimes I would go home with a bit of a headache.
Yeah,
I was thinking, I'm just not sure if I dealt with that. Should I be more managerial? I just wasn't sure.
it is difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think especially, I would say, you know, Lambert in particular, it seems to be a very egalitarian place, or at least, you know, superficially. But it's not a place that has a strongly developed hierarchy.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you know, there is that issue then, that, you know, if you are the boss, as you say, and I think that, you know, that I suppose, you know, that things like the appraisal system and so on would sort of make that a bit more explicit. Did you actually have to deal with any real difficult issues in terms of this?
I did with two different individuals, and so it was, I don't know how much to say really.
Was actually having to address performance issues, and you had to.
And then knowing what, you know, when somebody was given, let's say, a more technical task, and they just
weren't
quite immediate, and knowing that, say, well, actually, I don't expect you now to do this, so I'd rather you concentrate on this. And say, well, if I just had another 2 months to learn this, I don't have 2 months.
Yeah.
So we've got to make a decision here.
Yeah.
And that was hard because the person wouldn't want to have been kind of shown up for...
No.
You don't want to show it as a failing. But at the same time, they did know what was expected.
Yeah.
You know, going in and...
Objectively, they couldn't have minded, but...
Yeah.
But in terms of the feeling that they wouldn't, as you say, there's that exposure. I think in a way that's the hardest thing about managing a team is that dealing with people who are, you know, who are good at some things or are keen to do some things, but not necessarily what you want them to do.
No.
And how you manage that in a way that keeps them still motivated, but makes the change. It's a difficult, difficult thing to do. I think everybody says that, you know. I think it's particularly hard if your natural style is to be egalitarian and inclusive and relaxed and you know, trusting people. That if that's your natural position, then moving to being sort of the boss is hard because you're having to change that.
Yeah.
There are people who just, you know, their default is that they're the boss.
That's right. Yeah.
For them it's not a problem. I mean, they know it's the opposite problem for them.
Sure.
That's an interesting thing.
And then there was another problem with somebody else who was doing fine, but was very aware that everybody else on the team got to get up from their desk and get into their car and go off to either a business or a conference or a day away or so on. And this person did not want to be the desk person, but that was the rule.
Yeah.
And it was difficult then to kind of meet that person to say, well, if you're willing to do this when you go to this particular meeting, then by all means go. But you know, you can't just go there just to do paperwork.
Yes.
It's not a day out. We just don't have that kind of budget or flexibility. Mm. We need all hands on desk all the time.
Yes.
So that was tricky. So I met that a number of times. I always had to find ways of kind of, but it was a negotiation. Mm. I never found that this hadn't been thought through on the other person's part before they saw me.
Yeah.
They kind of, you know, planned out and why this was necessary. And
yeah, I mean, it is difficult, because I think that that's I think that, you know, as you know, in a managerial role, that we're used to having quite a lot of control over what we do, deciding whether we, you know, whether we want to whether we need to go to a meeting or not, you know, that's our choice, and you know, or what we do all day, well, you know, but we have a lot of things to do, but we have a lot of control over how we do them, and that it's, you know, it's different if people say, well, you know, if you tell them that's where their desk is, that's where their desk is, and you know, and that they may feel that they may end up with grievances, which you know, as you say, you say, well, this is the job you signed up for, but you know, that doesn't necessarily make them happy. And then that's, you know, but as I say, I think certainly that's you know, that they say that about sort of job satisfaction, isn't it, that giving people agency, even if, you know, if it's a choice between doing two rotten jobs, just giving them the choice transforms the way they think about it, because because the thing, the genuinely that feeling that they've at least made a choice and they can live with it, rather than, you know, and again, come back to, you know, if you say, which desk do you want? I would like that one. Never mind that it's not actually very nice. Brilliant. Okay. That's it then. We've got part to the end.
Fantastic.
Oh, great. Brilliant.
Thanks very much.
That's really interesting.
I think that's
intensity of the of the process, that, you know, sort of, you know, that you'll have lived with that project for that long.
That's right.
With it being at the top of your mind, all the time. And then, you know, I suppose one thing, in terms of project closure.
Yeah.
You prepared the records and then gave them over to Swansea, presumably?
Well, actually not Swansea, they're all archived in Lampeter.
So, has it ever had any audits or anything in terms of the project?
The project closed in the June of 2015, and we had an audit then in August and then November. But of course, we can be audited at any time in the next 11 years. So we had a closure file, which was really good, and we were able to contribute to that as well, and that was really helpful. So we had it all signed off, right up by, you know, the Pro Vice Chancellor and so on, and then I think the digital copy of everything on the SOAR folder went to Rhys, or whatever they call themselves, the Research and Innovation. And then all the boxes then were, you know, labelled and stamped, and they're all in the Texaco building.
So did you have to do that after the end of the project, in terms of the, you know, was that an unwanted extra job at the end?
With nobody around.
Unbelievable. Which I think that's something, again, so I'm thinking about, you know, the institution's attitude to projects, is that I think it does forget about that tail end of dealing with loose ends.
That's right.
I mean, we've been lucky with ours, because while we were developing the bid for the current one, we had a period of 6 months where we finished the old project and hadn't started the new one, so we were able to actually go chase all the old bits of paperwork and so on. But I mean it's one of those things that, you know, obviously we've prepared the records as well as we can. I'm not convinced that, you know, an auditor who came in on a bad day there are some sort of inconsistencies and some gaps where you know, you just don't have the document that you ought to have, and there's a file note saying this, that, and
that. That's right. That whole annotation doesn't quite fit, so you do worry, you know.
Yeah, no,
rather exactly. Just pick on one page of a file, I have no idea.
Brilliant. Great. Well, thank you very much for taking part. That's brilliant. Brilliant. Oh, I shall take that now.
I hope you have good success with all of your meetings.
Cheers. Well, yeah. We